the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, joined again by Sam Robson. And Sam, in honour of the J-League Ultimate 11's podcast I did for our Patreon supporters at last week with Alan Gibson and Cesare Polenghi, if you could go back in time in J-League history and be able to watch one player live, Sam, who would you choose?
Well, first of all, a really enjoyable podcast last week. Great set of teams set up. But the one I think he was mentioned by both Alan and Cesare, but not picked, I'd definitely go with Zico. I think just because his name resonates so much with Japanese football, you still see it every Cash and Rantlers game. He's still there as the technical director. And he's a player that he's finished his career pretty much when I was two, so I haven't really had much chance to catch any of him. I've seen a few highlights of Brazil games, but yeah, such a good player, such a key figure in kind of the build of the J-League. So yeah, he'd be the one that I would most like to go back and see. But yeah, and I know in that podcast you kind of squirmed out of a question where you were asked your opinion on players that were that could have been picked. So who, out of the teams that weren't picked, what player would you have picked if it was your team?
Oh, gee whiz. One of the probably one of the more experienced goalkeepers to go into Alan's team rather than Kim Sung-yu, who is obviously an excellent keeper in his own right. But I mean, for longevity in along similar lines to Narazaki, I mean, Yoshikazu Kawaguchi would have been a good shout, or there were probably a couple of other goalkeepers I had in mind, and he was mentioned right at the end, and again, after I squirmed out of answering Cesare's question, Sam, but I was, stunned that Alan didn't pick Tsuneyasu Miyamoto. He did finally get around to mentioning him late on, but I would have bet the house that the two players that Alan would have picked would have been Miyamoto and Endo, and then filled out the rest of his team around them. But as it was, he did put together a very strong three-man defence. So, he's certainly done well leaving Miyamoto on his bench, as it were. But, thanks for your kind words on the episode. It was a lot of fun to do, and hopefully the patrons have been enjoying it and have gotten around to voting in the poll, because, bragging rights are on the line between Cesare and Alan. That is for certain. All right, Sam, we'll welcome in our guest for this week's episode from the Japan Times. Dan Olowitz is joining us again. Dan, fantastic to have you back on. How are you?
I'm good. Time is a flat circle. I don't know what day it is. We're all surviving. that's sort of how it is. Day whatever this.
You've got the giggles early doors again, Dan, much like your last appearance.
That's right. That was a giggle fest.
I was actually, saying to Sam as we were getting the lineup for, the agenda, I guess, for this podcast ready. I'm finally in the same boat. I had periods over the weekend where I didn't realize it was the weekend. And I realize now we're just catching up with the rest of the world, that people like Sam, who have been in lockdown for a month at least, by now will have be experiencing this feeling every day. But as things, I guess, get tighter and tighter in Japan, we're starting to experience how the rest of the world has lived for the past few weeks.
Yeah, it's fortunately the numbers from Tokyo today sounded pretty good. Obviously, like Monday is always the low number of the week, but it seems like Japan is finally starting to take this whole thing seriously. So it's going to be a rough few more weeks, but if we can hold out, then hopefully we'll be able to leisurely go outside by June, maybe. Here's hoping.
By that time, hopefully we'll be thinking about when the J-League might resume. Dan, I better be a decent host and ask you the same question that I asked Sam off the top. I know you've been in Japan for quite a while and seen a lot of J-League and a lot of great players in the J-League in your time. But if you could go back in J-League history, it doesn't have to be that long, of course, but and go back and see one player live, or maybe one player again live, who would you choose?
Well, I had two options, and Sam took my first one, because I think it would have been amazing to see Zico, not just because of his skill, but I just would have loved to have been able to watch a J-League game in that era, in the early days. I feel like that would have been, you know, just a fascinating experience, and I would have loved to be there for that. My second choice, who I believe neither Alan nor Cesare chose, and it's for probably good reason, is Hidetoshi Nakata. Mm. I would have loved to see him, you know, in the early days playing for Belmonte, and, you know, being able to see Belmonte play with such a strong player would have been a real trip. And because he retired in 2006, which would have been shortly before I came to Japan, so I never had a chance to see him play. And that's my pick.
Yeah, fair enough. I would go for the player who was the... well, actually, I shouldn't give it away, should I? One of the early selections in the draft, and that was Dragan Stojkovic. Came to Japan after he had hung up the boots, and I know him predominantly as the manager of Nagoya when they won the J-League for the first and only time in their history. But yeah, I mean, seeing some of the highlights of him just absolutely taking the piss, stunning. Stunning football, and yeah, we mentioned it a couple of times in the past couple of months on the pod. Yeah, I mean, his volley from the technical area at the Nissan Stadium just has to be seen to be believed, and that is, yeah, the greatest goal in the history of football as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, to see him actually in his pomp for Grampus would have been absolutely magic. And from a personal point of view, I did actually get to see Amaral play live once. But to see him in his heyday, I realise he did a lot of work before FC Tokyo entered the J-League. But yeah, in the early days when Tokyo had just come up in 1999, that would have been fantastic to be on the terraces and see the King of Tokyo at his best. All right, well, we again encourage the patrons to vote on the poll as to which team they preferred the lineup, Gibson FC versus AC Pulangi, two very very strong outfits, no question whatsoever. But yeah, only one team can win the poll because I didn't allow a draw as an option. So yeah, looking forward to getting the results in for that. All right, well, let's move on. A couple of major pieces of news in the past week, and well, Dan, it's been about a month since we had you on. That last appearance of yours, you were mentioning the financial problems that Sagan Tosu and Consadole Sapporo were having or were anticipating with this J-League hiatus in the past few days. The shocking state of affairs, basically, at Sagan Tosu financially has finally been brutally exposed.
Yeah, Sagan Tosu are in trouble. They are in major trouble. They posted a loss of I think $18.5 million, so about 2.1 billion yen. I believe those are the numbers. It is probably one of the biggest losses that's been reported in the history of the J-League. And I've been looking up some of those for my next column. So, yeah, I've seen some of those numbers. And, I mean, this is really bad. There's no way around it. They have managed to avoid insolvency by... It's called third-party allocation of shares, which basically means they printed up shares and sold them to another stakeholder. Not quite sure who that is. I'm sure it's come up in some of the real niche outlets. I just haven't come across it yet. But it's bad. If you look at how much they're continuing to pay for players... if you consider that clubs are expected to have massive losses of match day revenue this season. If you consider that Tosu are still without a major uniform sponsor, remember that DHC pulled out last winter, and they had a piecemeal deal with the local newspaper. So without all these things, and they've got sponsors who are actually talking about wanting to freeze their contracts temporarily or tear up their contracts temporarily, all of this is adding up to nothing good. Like, there are very few there's very, very little good news to be taken from their balance sheet as it stands. And without a huge amount of luck, I don't know, a lot of officials are telling newspapers that they don't see the club surviving the season. And it's possible that they may not even make it to when the league resumes.
You mentioned, I think, on one of your tweets in the last few days that there's the potential for some sort of transfer protocol where Saigon Tosu maybe would be allowed to sell players to get them off the books, or maybe be loaned in players if they do have to sell them. So do you think that maybe the releasing of the main players and just trying to survive this season with a youth team, would that be, is that enough to keep them in financially sustainable just for this season, or are the problems even deeper than that?
Well, you look at what Konstantinopoli Sapporo are, their situation, and you look at what their team chairman, Yoshikazu Nonomura, said, and he said that even if clubs survive this year, it's next year that's going to be harder. So the league has created a lot of exemptions to help clubs and to prevent clubs from, being relegated, for example, or losing their club licenses because of anything that happened this season. So in that sense, Tosu are safe. That is their lifeline, that as long as the club survives, they shouldn't lose their J-League license, probably. But the J-League could still, if they're insolvent, if they're out of cash, the league could still relegate them to the third division or below. I don't know sort of the details of that. I've been sort of reading up and trying to figure that out. I don't think that that's the most likely scenario. I think that everyone's going to try to figure out a way to keep the club going. But one issue that's been brought up, I mean, you brought up this transfer thing where they could theoretically be allowed to ship out all of their expensive players. And they do have quite a few. I mean, they did send Mu Kanazaki to Nagoya Grampus, and I sort of wonder what the terms of that were and who's going to be paying his salary. But they still have a lot of players on the books. In fact, I think 2018 was the first year. I don't think they had any players on loan, something like that. Like, all of their players were players who were signed to contracts. No special, no type 2 type players. None of those JFA special designation players. So they've got a lot of them in their books. And they're still, last year they had to eat Fernando Torres's contract. It's a mess. They've got to get the money from somewhere. But, for example, the league's sort of what I've been referring to in shorthand is an emergency fund. The rule there is that you have to be able, it used to be that you had to pay back the loan in 1 year. They've changed that, so now it's within 3 years. But there's concern that Tosu might not be approved for such a loan, and the max they could get as a J1 club is 350 million yen, so about 3 million US. The fear is that they the league will think that they won't be able to pay it back within 3 years. And if the league has that little faith in the club's ability to start, you know, to generate cash and to be able to pay that loan back, you know, that doesn't speak well for the club's potential future.
You've mentioned that obviously they're in such dire straits. Is there any risk that this club will disappear entirely, or do you think a very worst case scenario is a form of Sagan Tosu in the JFL?
I mean, the funny thing is that this has all happened before. I wouldn't even say that it wasn't their predecessor, but the club that existed in Tosu before Sagan Tosu, which was called Sagan Futures FC, Sagan Future, I think of Futures with an S, they were backed by this company, and this was in the mid-90s, and they were pushing, they had J-League associate membership in 1994. And they were pushing to get into the J-League. And they finished fourth in the JFL for 3 straight years. And what happened was their main sponsor backed out, the main shareholder backed out. They had $12 million in debt. The club folded. The local football association started Sagan, or they started Sagan Tosu FC, or Sagan FC, I forget what it was, I've been staring at these tabs all day. The J-League gave them special dispensation to participate in the Nabisco Cup as a JFL team, which is a weird bit of history. Mm. And then they had this massive sort of fundraising effort, local municipalities donated money. Someone on my timeline tweeted this thing where Urawa Reds fans were buying tickets and donating it to local children in Tosu to give the club revenue. Mm. Like, so there was this massive grassroots effort to help, you know, keep football in Tosu, in Saga Prefecture. You know, can something happen? You know, I think that the J-League fans have a lot of fondness for Sagan Tosu. I think that, you know, if there was like a grassroots sort of crowdfunding thing, you know, people are going to give money, but that's a lot of money and everyone's club is hurting. Yeah, there are clubs that we don't know about that could be in trouble. There are going to be a lot of J2 and J3 clubs that are barely holding on. So I don't think that the J-League is going to say, well, let them fold. I think that the J-League will do anything to keep them alive, even if it means selling all their players, sending them to the J3, and, you know, letting them work their way up. Like, I mean, that could happen. I don't think that they're going to get bounced to the JFL, but it's pretty grim right now. Unless they get someone, you know, if there's any big company out there that wants to buy a football team and pull off what, like, Takata did at Vivare Nagasaki, now's the time. But I don't see something like that happening this year of all years.
Just on that, why do you think it is that Sagan have really struggled to get any sort of sponsorship or investors? I mean, this has been going on, obviously, before this pandemic. Obviously, this is making it worse. But it just seems like they're an established J1 team. It's a very good league in Asia. I just thought some company somewhere would think this is a good opportunity. But
with all due respect to anyone listening who might be living out there, I mean, it's like, it's in the middle of nowhere. Like, I mean, not like middle of nowhere that Kashima is. Like, at least they're close to a railway station. But, you know, it's a small, it's a very, 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 very small market club. Mm. And, you know, Tosu, the city of Tosu only has about like 70,000 people, I think. So, you know, they're not going to be able to keep up with, you know, Avispa Fukuoka. I think the model that Tosu used to sort of overperform in their early years in the J1, you know, sort of similar to like Kashua Reysol, you know, a lot of academy graduates, a lot of rentals. You know, they had a lot of like young players and they made it work and they played the, you know, the sort of Iron Curtain style, you know, very defensive manner of football, and that worked for them. But yeah, I think they saw their shot and they took it and it didn't work. I don't know what. Yes, it's an attractive club in and of itself. You know, great support, great stadium. But if you're, you know, an investor, if you're a big company looking to sponsor a professional sports team, why are you going to go all the way out to Kyushu when you can invest in someone like Machida Zelvia, as Cyber Agent did? Like, you know, you're going to want the media attention, you're going to want the exposure, and that means doing it closer to Tokyo or Osaka. So I don't know. It's tough. Right now, it's not looking good, and either this news will sort of inspire local civic pride to rise up and come up with the money somewhere, which I doubt, or the sponsors are going to see the writing on the wall and start pulling out, and the whole thing is going to collapse like a house of cards.
Indeed. Well, yeah, without question, the smallest market in J1. They have been ever present, as Sam said. They've been an established J1 club since they came up at the end of the 2011 J2 season. So, yeah, they're, nudging almost a decade now in the top flight. But, yeah, in this perilous financial situation, it sounds like Sagan Tosu, well, we don't want to read the last rites to them, but yeah, it sounds like they are in, it goes without saying, they're in a massive amount of trouble. And, Dan, just one more from me. Sam's asked you some terrific questions there. I mean, are there chickens coming home to roost now with the Torres thing? Are there people now ruining the fact that they even went down this path with Torres? I mean, it obviously cost them a massive amount of money to get a player who was on his last legs, and you know, wasn't basically they were able to stay up after Torres left because they were able to free themselves from having to play him in every game. Do you think they're ultimately the coronavirus itself might be the thing that wipes them out, but the whole Torres debacle might have been just started the ball rolling down the hill uncontrollably?
I mean,
worth a shot at the end of the day, I suppose.
Was it worth a shot? I mean, you miss all the shots you don't take. I think that at the time we all saw Torres going to Sagan Tosu and thought, what the fuck is he doing? And that's still kind of true. Maybe, I was thinking about this earlier, maybe he buys the club. Maybe he invests. Maybe Torres gets together, you know, a group of investors and they purchase the club. Like, they do that, fine. Build a statue of him outside the stadium. You know, like, that could work. Mm. I think that's probably the most plausible scenario of everything we've discussed so far. Or I should, that's like, not maybe not the most plausible right now, but, like, that's the happiest ending, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he's got to have money saved up, and he knows people with money to burn. Listen, if David Beckham can spend as much cash as he did and take as long as he did to get Inter Miami out there in MLS, you know, Torres can write a check to Sagan Tosu. Like, that's probably their last chance to really make this work. But, I mean, you look at clubs that have had big financial issues. I mean, Nagasaki got very lucky. Tokyo Verdy after 2009 weren't as lucky. Oita Trinita after 2009 took 3 years to pay back that, you know, $5 million loan from the J League. Those two clubs are the reason why we have the, part of the reason why the club license system is what it is, to prevent this sort of thing from happening. And, this is sort of an example of it's play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, well, I tell you what, Sam, we better hope they don't go out of business, because we've spent a lot of time trying to work out a revamp of the Levain Cup, and if they drop out of the J-League and the number gets reduced by one team, then we're, our math is going to be completely off as we try to work out a knockout format for the League Cup.
Well, absolutely. We've already teared up various iterations of it. We can't deal with another one.
Indeed, indeed. All right. Well, Dan, I'm sure that there'll be stuff on Sagan Tosu's financial situation in your upcoming From the Spot in the Japan Times. And will there also be a mention on the format for the 100th iteration of the Emperor's Cup, because that has taken us all by surprise. It's sent some of us to the floor in absolute disbelief at what is shaping up to be the, as I say, the 100th edition of Japan's Premier Cup competition. Unfortunately, due to the coronavirus, it's been absolutely gutted, basically. It's... amongst other things, you just simply have to wonder why they're even going to try and bother this year.
I think that, and actually this is a good point that was brought up to me by someone on Twitter, that this is technically the 100th edition of the Emperor's Cup. But in fact, not all 100 editions have taken place. Uh-huh. Because as some readers may know, a number of editions, I believe 8 editions, have been canceled, for various reasons. Most of them during World War II and, the immediate aftermath, the political instability and all that. One more was canceled due to the death of Emperor Taisho, and the 1934 edition was canceled for the Far Eastern Championship Games. So that's something that existed, and that's a bit of Asian football trivia that I'm sure Paul and Scott over at the Asian Game can get into. It's... I do think that having this 100th edition, this sort of centennial edition, I mean, there is some prestige to it. That's important. And you know, it's... I just don't know. It's such a weird thing. I was listening to Stuart and John ruminate on this format, and they were suggesting that sort of, well, the semifinals will be whichever J1 teams are in first and second at the time, I think they suggested, which sort of assumes that the J1 won't be finished in time for the semifinals, which is an odd assumption to me, and that's not on Stuart and John, but it does bring up a very good question of what if the league won't finish before the Emperor's Cup semifinals? Mm. And does the JFA setting this date give the J-League a template for sort of how it needs, you know, now the J-League knows that it has to finish its season, or at least finish the J1 season, before the 27th. I would assume sort of like by the 22nd, 23rd, so that those teams can rest. I don't know. you know what? Like they, I mean, they were talking about. Yeah, I feel bad. I'm talking out of school to you guys about another podcast on the J Talk Network, which is, you know, what it's sort of turning out to be. But it's, you know, wouldn't it have been sort of cool to see Honda FC face like Ryutsu Daigaku, Ryutsu Keizai Daigaku, in the National Stadium on New Year's Day? Like, that would sell. People go to anything, you know. The high school final sells out Saitama Stadium. You'd sell out the National Stadium for Honda FC. How weird would that be?
Well, I mean, it could still happen because, yeah, I mean, the two J1 teams, whoever they are, and we presume they'll be the first and second in the table at an arbitrary point. But yeah, I mean, the J1 season might finish 3 days before the semi-finals. So they might have played 20 league games in, I don't know, 9.5 weeks for all we know. So yeah, I mean, they could be absolutely out on their feet by the time they're supposed to play an Emperor's Cup semi-final on the 27th of December. And, you weren't obviously having a go at Stuart and John. I guess in their defence, they probably, their heads were spinning and they probably weren't maybe up to speed on the dates, and it probably didn't compute that, yes, the two J1 teams would enter presumably after their season had finished, not being in the top two in the table at the time of the semi-finals taking place. But again, I'm putting words in their mouth, so I don't know. But
I think that's the thing. It's like it's not on them because like we don't know what's going to happen. They may, you know, if things stretch on, you know, let's hope that they don't. But if who knows, like if there's a second wave of infections in September and the league has to go on hold for another 2 months, you know, what then? Are they going to play the Emperor's Cup final and then finish the J1 in January? Maybe they'll push back the Emperor's Cup final. I forget exactly when it was that they started playing on New Year's Day. I know that it was... What was the reason? I think it was like when Yoyogi Park opened or something like that. Like they were trying to drive like people to visit the area, something like that. I know I tweeted this at some point. Someone can look it up. We just don't know. Like it's nice to think of this as a concept. We just don't know until the J League gets restarted and we actually get these games in the can. Like this is all theory. This is like, yeah, this is quantum physics. Like basically football is quantum physics at this point. Like it all works in theory. We just don't know what it will actually do in practice.
Yeah, the proposals just seem to there's some detail missing, I think, especially with this J1 teams participating in the semi-final, because there was another caveat with it, so if the J-League team wins, they go into the ACL, or it goes down to fourth place, but then if J1 has already finished, then they've already got an ACL place, so okay, it doesn't make sense.
So I figured this out. I haven't like 100% figured this out, but I've more or less figured this out, which is that this isn't about what, like, the JFA doesn't decide how its ACL spots are allotted. I think that's decided at the AFC level. Mm-hmm. So, the JFA couldn't arbitrarily decide to give the spot to the winner of the Levan Cup.
Yeah.
So they're required to send 3 from the J League and 1 from the Emperor's Cup. And so I think that's the formality. But then again, if they wanted to, they could just say, nope, amateur teams only. Oh, wait, none of these amateur teams have an AFC license. Have the ACL license, whatever they call it, I guess we'll just have to give spot four to a J-League team. So, yeah, I guess they could have made it an all-amateur competition. And that would actually be kind of cool in a purist way. Like, you know, that's some magic of the cup right there. Like, that's pretty cool. But, you know, for whatever reason, they want to get those two J-League teams in there. And maybe they'll even change their mind at some point. Who knows?
Yeah, I prefer it, as you say, kind of as a purist thing. Because by dropping these J1 teams into the semi-finals, it's basically saying, you amateur teams, you play a few games, and then we'll put the final together for you. It's just, yeah, forget everything that's come across. We want Yokohama versus Kashima or whatever it is as our final.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I just wondered whether somebody at JFA House had left this file open on their computer and somebody, a cleaner, had come along and was dusting the keyboard and accidentally got their finger stuck on the backspace button and, you know, erased like two or three rounds of the Emperor's Cup and then basically tried to stitch it back together and hit send in a panic because it just, yeah, it's just, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. But if you're going to try and set up a competition like this, and obviously we know that the J-League is separate from the JFA, but I mean the J-League is famous for changing formats, you know, often getting a lot of vehement opposition to it. But I mean, you know, in this situation, I guess they just felt they couldn't see an easier way around it. But I mean, yeah, to simply drop the top two J1 teams into the semi-finals, as Sam says, after these other the prefectural tournament winners and one amateur seed in Honda FC have battled through to where there's only two of them left standing, and then these other the J1 teams come in. It's just I don't know. So, well, good luck at trying to make sense of this in from the spot. Anyway, Dan.
Thanks. No, I think I'm good. From the next column is going to focus on the financial stuff with Sagan Tosu. I've got a fun history lesson planned, and I'll look at the Emperor. I think I'm going to probably look at the Emperor's Cup in a week or two once the next task force has their meeting and they get an idea of what the schedule is going to look like, because that's really what it's going to come down to. Like, if we're getting into a July restart, I think the Levine Cup's got to go. I just don't see it happening. And one competition that we've discussed in passing, we still don't know what's happening to the ACL.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows at this? Like I said, all football is quantum physics at this point. It's all theoretical. None of it's real. Chaos energy, everything.
Yes, great to have chaos energy. Indeed, chaos energy J-League, terrific stuff. All right, well, so Dan, what do we know at this stage in terms of the task forces, the intergalactic task force between the J-League and the Nippon Professional Baseball, the lie of the land as we sit here on the 27th of April. You know, obviously we've had a couple of hopeful restart dates pushed back, and now obviously things are just postponed indefinitely. What's the lie of the land, and do you see any light at the end of the tunnel? Again, as we presume that things haven't got as bad as they might possibly get here in Japan with the virus.
It does seem like, I mean, the last task force meeting, which was on Thursday, the fifth day ago of today. I'm catching up on the giggles just because the Sagan Tosu segment was so serious.
Sure.
And they were basically just sort of going over what they know about the coronavirus and discussing what steps they can take, and it was basically the two league chairmen saying that they were prepared to accept that their seasons will probably start without supporters, and that's sort of where we're at. I saw there was a Telegraph article from the last day or two that broke down how many staff need to be in the stadium for a match without supporters. And for a Premier League game, that's still 200-300 people. Of course, that includes like 100 broadcast staff for TV and radio, 28 writers, only 2 photographers, which would never fly here because, like, you know, it's Japan and no news outlet will ever accept not being able to send their own photographer. Plus, you know, the players, coaches, medical staff, referees, you know, the doping officers, all that stuff. So, yeah, you can get to... I don't think that a J-League game needs 100 people doing the live broadcast, but, you know, figure 50, maybe. I don't know, that's like, what, 8... like 9 or 10 cameras, 2 or 3 people each, the control room. So, yeah, figure... let's call it 50. I don't know. It's good. They'll figure it out, I guess. You know, it's a waiting game. I think that we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks, see where we stand with the state of emergency, which is supposed to end on the 6th of May, and then, but we expect it to be extended, at least in some locations. Yeah, the problem is you really can't be too careful. If we get a second peak, then we're all fucked. So... it's just the waiting game right now.
Indeed. Do you think there would ever come a time where the J-League might consider, you know, some of the more radical suggestions from the United States, where bunches of teams are sequestered in, you know, certain parts of the country, and basically they're quarantined there and live a self-contained life where they're initially quarantined for, you know, a week, 10 days to establish that nobody has the virus, and then they play a certain number of games in a in that controlled space where nobody is allowed to enter or nobody is allowed to leave, and presumably the virus doesn't do the same, so that they can get a number of games played in a certain period of time. Do you think that would ever be that would ever come across the table during one of these task force meetings?
No, no. The Phoenix, the MLB Phoenix thing, like that's just foolhardiness. That's like not, it's an idea. But remember, I mean, MLB has hundreds of millions of dollars involved, like, or billions of dollars. Like, that's, each one of those leagues is worth, you know, 10 J-Leagues, probably. I don't know, just, that's a number I pull out of my ass. But, like, you're probably getting there. Like, but that aside, like, let's say that you were entertaining this notion. Where? Mm. Where are there enough pitches? You know, all of those pitches have to be maintained. All of those pitches are being used 2-3 times a week. All of those teams still need somewhere to train.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, it's... I guess you could do, like... you could maybe do it in Kyushu. Yeah, just take over like Miyazaki and Kagoshima, where most of the teams go to already for training camp, you know, for winter camp. You put, maybe you put the J3 in Okinawa. I'm sure they'll love that. Put the J, well, yeah, but again, I don't even think Okinawa has enough pitches to make that feasible. And you're still like, no, it's a nightmare. I just don't see it.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah, all right. So we obviously know the situation is no clearer this week. So, yeah, listeners, don't feel like we've buried the lead or anything by leaving a possible resumption to basically third in our running order. That's because, yeah, there's no news on that front. And Yeah, you obviously don't envy the task force with having to work through all of the permutations. But as Dan says, it does appear that when the leagues are able to resume, that it'll almost certainly be behind closed doors. And obviously, yeah, that's an understandable state of affairs until people feel comfortable going out to be around other people at big events. So that's something for the very distant future, I would suggest. All right, well...
I believe, Ben, you mean the socially distant future.
Oh, indeed. Yes. All right, just before we go, I did mention it earlier. Sam and I have done so much work, and our brains are ache from trying to get the numbers to work. So before we leave, we will fill you in on our idea to revamp the Levain / Nabisco Cup. We can't really call it the Nabisco Cup anymore, but I just do it for old time's sake. This is another part of Sven's raft of ideas / suggestions for the podcast that we obviously started to do last week with the Stuarts, Woodward and Smith. Sven said that, yeah, most people don't like the Levain Cup, and he's aware of that. So how would you set the league up without it? And that is obviously a perfectly acceptable option, Sam, because, for example, South Korea have gone without a League Cup for pretty much the last decade, I think. They might have even got rid of it before the 2010s started. But, that is a possibility. But, Sam, I'll give you the honour of revealing our plan, because you were the one who finally cracked the maths. So as it stands, we've got 56... clubs in from J1 down to J3, of course, excluding the three under 23 clubs. So, how would a knockout Levain Cup work?
Yeah, we'd have to get rid of the group stage. I mean, that's the bane of my life, is the Levain Cup group stage. So that has to go. And these are one game, single knockout rounds, no extra time, go straight to penalties if there's a draw, and it's doable. I definitely include J1 to J3, so all 56. And it works with, if you take 8 buys from the top 8 probably of J1 the previous season, leaves you with 48 teams in round 1. 24 teams will then go through to round 2, bring in the 8 buys, so that's 32. You're at around the 32 at that point, then just, as you would be, knockout round from then onwards. You get through to a final, everyone's happy. You can schedule it around the ACL games just for those 4 teams, but I don't think they should be coming in with like 3 or 4 games to play into that, so they can win a tournament. So yeah, bring those in at the second round. I think knockout round, get a proper league cup across all the leagues. I think it'd be much more exciting, and yeah, hopefully a bit more of an attendance than the current couple of thousand that come in for youth games on a Wednesday night.
Indeed, yeah, sounds good to me. Music to my ears. And obviously, yeah, with the without the 8 bye teams in the first round, you'd just have a completely open draw. So, a J3 team could get, Morioka could get drawn to host Kashima Antlers in the first round, right? You'd just do it completely openly?
Yeah, I'd do it completely openly. I mean, there could be some argument that because of the extra travel on a Wednesday night for the smaller clubs, you might want to regionalise it for maybe the first round or two. That's a possibility, but otherwise, yeah, as open as possible.
Yeah, obviously, we haven't completely sussed it out there, Sven, but Sam's got the maths to work, so that's something that we'll be lobbying G-League House for in the coming years. And the best thing about it is you don't have to worry about how many teams are in J2 or in J3 or J1, for that matter, for any given season. If you just work with the total number of teams and, if you give... those 8 buys off the top, and then the other team's kind of a free for all right off the bat. So what do you reckon, Dan? I mean, we obviously have some happy memories of I can call it the Nabisco Cup now, as FC Tokyo supporters, of course, our first major trophy in 2004, and then of course that magical day in 2009. But it is a very tired old competition, isn't it? And a revamp like this could be the shot in the arm it needs. But I mean, at the same time, the J League just seems to just be massively in love with this group stage that they'll never let go of.
Yeah, I do agree that with basically everything you guys have said, I would love to see a 3-league straight knockout tournament. And here's how you fix the issue of the smaller teams traveling on a Wednesday night. You make it the rule, lower seed always hosts. I think that's how you have to do it. Let's see, you know, let's see Urawa traveling out to, like, Akita on a Wednesday night. That, you know, that's the magic of the cup right there. And if it's, you know what, if it's 56, or if there's only 55 clubs, you know what you do? Or if there's a weird, odd number of clubs, you just invite the top-seeded J-League, you know, the associate member, the 100-year vision member, you invite the top-seeded J-League associate member, and you have them join in. Why not?
Or, you ask Honda FC in the case of the Emperor's Cup, Dan. But that's very topical that you mentioned the associate members and the 100-year plan clubs there, because that is another idea that Sven had for us, and that is something that we'll be touching on in next week's podcast. You've done me well there, Dan. That's a massive tease for the next episode of the pod, and so I appreciate that. You didn't know that was coming, but fantastic stuff. Thank you for that. All right, so that's the state of play with things at the moment. Things looking very grim for Sagan Tosu. We're still scratching our heads with what's happening with the Emperor's Cup, and we're no closer to a J-League return. So it's been about a month between drinks, Dan, so hopefully within the next month we'll start to get some positive news on the whole COVID-19 state of things in Japan, and we might be somewhat closer to getting some sort of a resumption, at least in the planning stage. So for now, we'll leave it there. Thank you for your time again on the podcast, and I guess we'll probably check in about a month or so.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I hope everyone stays safe, washes their hands. You know, if you live in a place where you tip your delivery workers, tip them twice as much as you usually would, and stay the fuck inside.
Very, very well said. All right, well, Sam, terrific stuff as always, and look forward to doing it again next week.
Yeah, always a pleasure, and thank you again to all our Patreon supporters, and thanks to Sven for his suggestions.
Yes, very well said, Sam. Thank you very much. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk Podcast. My thanks again to Dan Ulowitz and to Sam Robson, of course, and to you for listening wherever you are. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.